President Rouhani says Iran is the only party to the 2015 nuclear deal that has paid for keeping the accord alive. But things cannot continue like this. The U.S. Senate passes a huge coronavirus relief plan as the country is struggling to tackle the economic fallout of the pandemic. And China saying that its exports recorded their fastest annual growth in over two decades during the first 2 months of the year. It's good to have you with us. Our top story, President Hassan Rouhani is calling on Europe to end its inaction regarding the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. The president issued the call as he met Ireland's foreign minister, Simon Coveney, in Tehran. Coveney is visiting Iran as a UN Security Council facilitator of the nuclear deal signed by the Islamic Republic and six world powers. Rouhani said that the accord will be reactivated once the U.S. lifts the sanctions on Iran and all parties keep their sides of the bargain. He said Iran is the only party that has paid for keeping the deal alive, but things cannot go on like this. Then Coveney called the 2018 U.S. withdrawal from the deal a historic mistake. He said the new U.S. administration is determined to re-enter the accord. Pope Francis has started his tour of northern Iraq on the final leg of his historic visit to that country. The Pope began his tour with a visit to the city of Erbil. He then went to Mosul, the former stronghold of the Daesh terror group in the country. Security has been tight in Mosul, where the Pope will lead a prayer for the victims of war. He will be back again in Erbil on Sunday afternoon when he will celebrate Mass. Pope Francis began his trip to Iraq on Friday, marking the first such visit to the country. He's met with Iraq's top Shia cleric, Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani. The two sides have called for peace. Three Palestinian fishermen have been killed after an explosion hit their boat off the Gaza Strip. I talked to our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, and he has some details.
When the bodies of the three fishermen arrived at the hospital, officials there said that the fishermen were hit by an explosive device, possibly fired by the Israeli gunboats that patrolled the sea off the coast of the Gaza Strip. There were other incidents this today by Israeli gunboats firing at Palestinian fishermen. Over the past decade or so, Israel have killed over two dozen Palestinian fishermen and injured thousands more. Palestinian fishermen come almost on a daily basis under attacks by the Israeli military that keeps the Gaza Strip under a tight aerial land and naval blockade since 2007. We're still waiting for more details on what happened this morning off the coast of the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis. But so far, the Israeli military denied that it attacked the boats. Palestinian fishermen not only suffer from the Israeli naval attacks, but sometimes they also come under attacks by the Egyptian Navy as well.
Yemen's Ansarullah forces and their allied army units have made advances on Marib Governorate to liberate it from Saudi-backed militants. Military sources say that Ansarullah and its allies are just several kilometers away from Marib City and are close to liberating it. The Marib Governorate is the last stronghold of Saudi-backed militants in Yemen. Ansarullah and its allies began their operations to free it last month. Almost 100 people have reportedly been killed on both sides. Reports also saying that Saudi Arabia has dispatched more troops to Marib to help the militants there. At the same time, Al-Qaeda terrorists are providing them with assistance too. That according to Yemeni intelligence. Now, to get some more information on this and this special coverage on Yemen, joining me will be a couple of guests. We'll have our own correspondent, Abdul Latif Al-Washali, in Sana'a. And we also have Saab Shath, author and Middle East affairs expert, joining us out of Belfast. Welcome to the special coverage on Yemen, both gentlemen. Let's first go to Sana'a to our correspondent, Abdul Latif, there. Abdul Latif, tell us about the advance that's been going on, the operation by the Ansarla fighters, getting closer to Marib. What's the situation like, and are we close to hear some good news?
Thank you so much. The Yemeni army is getting closer to the center of the city. They have controlled recently the Al-Balak Mountains, which is overlooking the city of Marib. There are also military reports saying the Surwah front has collapsed. The Yemeni army keeps advancing toward the city. The offensive will not stop until the liberation of the city, according to the Ministry of Defense in Sana'a. The Yemeni army keeps advancing from the west and the east of Marib. There are also some news saying the confirming the withdrawal of the Saudi forces from the city, and also the Tadi government has sent forces from the south of Yemen to reinforce the forces in Marib.
Now let's turn to Belfast. Mr. Shath, we had this news of Al-Qaeda, also terrorists, going to abet and assist the Saudi allied mercenaries. Where could they have come from? Who's behind this?
And the fact here, the Yemeni government in Sana'a runs the affairs of over 80% of the Yemeni people in the country, who resides in these areas controlled by the revolutionary committees, the Houthis, and the government of Yemen. The Saudi occupation forces and their militants take it from Al-Qaeda, as you mentioned in your, now, and the puppets deposed by President Hadi Hassan, former President Mansour, are controlling fractions of areas which resides in it under 20% of the people. The support comes for these militants are from mercenaries, or from Emiratis, or from Al-Qaeda, which is in there. And we've seen reports from the beginning of the conflict of Al-Qaeda being placed in an areas controlled by Emiratis forces in the south and in the north of Yemen, close enough to the north of Yemen, with the support of the Saudis as well. And the Americans are very much aware of all of this. But since Marib is a major front now, and the collapsing of Marib means practically the end of the Saudis' occupation in major of most of Yemen, that means Al-Qaeda have to act quick, because that means as well the elimination of Al-Qaeda from Yemen. And they are, as I said, these Al-Qaeda forces in Yemen and the other militants, it's an outfit of the same organization. It's another face of to the Saudis, Zionist and American supported occupation in Yemen. It's not strange to see that. The fact is there, but it needs people to pinpoint it.
And Mr. Shath, this is almost, it's getting close to 6 years since the Saudi-led invasion started against Yemen. And, you know, Yemen was already a poor country facing lots of problems and a, you know, divided government and all that. And still, they have been able to pull up resistance against all these aggression. What's behind the failure on the part of Saudi Arabia and its allies?
To begin with, we witnessed the Saudis when they buy weaponry from the United Kingdom or the United States of America, and this issue has been in the news lately. They even buy the operators of the weapons. They don't operate weapons themselves. They are not that, as they claim, have big armies or that. They depend all along, the Saudis and Saudi Arabia depend on Pakistani armies, on Maghreb, from Morocco, and others, and from Jordanian security forces. So they buy mercenaries and they buy other people to fight. We witness in Yemen, they brought the Sudanese, Senegal forces, and many other countries to support them. And even in targeting by fighter jets, they have coordinates from the United States of America. Obama's former administration supplied the Saudis of all of that and helped them, and the Israelis helped them in imposing the blockade on Yemen. So they don't have the ability to manage and to run real fighting machine. While the Yemenis are resilient, they fight without choiceless. They climb the mountains with AK-47s and face all of this sophisticated machinery, and they develop their capabilities because the Yemenis have a cause. The Yemenis are defending their homeland, and they are rebelling from the aggressors, while the Saudis are fulfilling agendas of the United States of America and the Zionist entity, and that's different. When you are defending your homeland, you will sacrifice everything to defeat the enemy, and the Saudis don't have the will or the means to continue the fight without the continuous bombardment and direction from the United States of America. Even the new administration of Joe Biden, which says demanding the Saudis in their famous compromise with the before elected as a president with his left wing and the Democrats to stop the war in Yemen, it's all just hypocrisy. But in real terms, they are backing and they are giving the Saudis whatever they want till today. We want to see real change in the policies in there to affect the Saudis, because this war is an American war. Once the United States of America wants to stop, it will stop.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments and contribution. We had our own correspondent, Abdul Latif Al-Washali, in the Yemeni capital city of Sana'a, and also Saab Shaf, author and Middle East affairs expert, who joined us from Belfast with his comments and contribution. And that's it for this special coverage on Yemen. Now, the U.S. Senate has passed a major rescue plan put forth by the administration to help revive the country's economy during the COVID pandemic.
The yeas are 50, the nays are 49. The bill as amended is passed.
Well, party line votes saw no Republicans voting for the $1.9 trillion package, assuming legislation now heading back to the House of Representatives. The Democratically majority chamber is expected to adopt the relief package, making it one of the largest stimulus plans in U.S. history. President Joe Biden hailed approval as a giant step toward reviving America's pandemic-hit economy.
When we took office 45 days ago, I promised the American people that help was on the way. Today, I can say we've taken one more giant step forward in delivering on that promise that help was on the way. This plan puts us on a path to beating the virus. This plan gives those families who are struggling the most the help and the breathing room they need to get through this moment. This plan gives small businesses in this country a fighting chance to survive.
The legislation would send out $1,400 stimulus checks to most Americans. It allocates $350 billion to state and local governments. It also provides $49 billion for COVID testing and $14 billion for vaccine distribution. The COVID pandemic has left more than 500,000 people dead out of 29 million cases in the U.S. Professor of Economics Steve Keen believes that more should have been done to help the Americans through the pandemic.
It's certainly good that it's been done. More should have been done because the real impact of the COVID on the average working American is that their cash flow has dried up, but their financial commitments still remain. So if you look at what that's meant to households in America, everybody's focusing on a so-called increase in the savings rate. That is actually just an artifact of the definition of savings as output minus consumption, where consumption has fallen more than output. But the actual level of household debt in America has risen by about 4 or 5% of GDP. So households are borrowing money just simply to keep on paying their bills. And this will go some way towards addressing that, but not the full distance.
Now, Paraguay's President Mario Abdo Benitez has announced a cabinet reshuffle amid unrest over his government's COVID response.
As president, my job is to serve our people. I'm aware that people are hoping for change, and I'm going to make them. That is why I have informed the entire cabinet that they will be relieved of their posts in the coming hours. Decrees for new appointments will be published.
Benitez called for greater participation and dialogue to correct mistakes. He also condemned acts of violence. The president has faced calls to step down over his response to the pandemic. People hit the streets of the capital, Asunción, on Friday, blaming him for worsening the situation. Security forces fired rubber bullets and tear gas to break up the rally. Several people were injured. Paraguay's COVID crisis has already forced the resignation of the health minister. The country has reported nearly 166,000 COVID cases and more than 3,200 deaths. Let's take a look at Europe. France has extended the weekend lockdowns to its northern parts as the country is struggling to contain the COVID-19 outbreak. The measure now puts more than 2 million people across France under the weekend restrictions. The pandemic has killed 88,300 people in the nation, one of the highest death tolls in Europe. In some countries, COVID restrictions have brought people to the streets. In Austria's capital, protesters demanded the resignation of Chancellor Sebastian Kurz. Many of them were not wearing masks, nor did they observe any social distancing. In Sweden, people rallied in the capital in defiance of a government ban on large gatherings. Six police officers were injured in the scuffles with protesters. Now, China says its exports recorded their fastest annual growth in over two decades during the January-February period. China's customs data shows exports jumped by over 60% in the first 2 months of the year, compared to a year before. The surge is fueled by a rebound in foreign demand, and that as manufacturing gets back on its feet in major economies, including the U.S. and EU. Economic activity in China was battered by the pandemic early in 2020. That led outbound trade to nosedive by 17%. China has largely weathered a pandemic ever since. I've spoken to author and columnist Einar Tengen, and he says that growing demand in the United States for Chinese goods have helped boost China's exports.
Remember, we're starting with from a very low base. This year, this period last year, 2020, the deficit with the U.S. in terms of imports was about $7 billion. Surplus, I should say, was $7 billion. This 2 month period, it's over $100 billion. So it's due to the last, obviously, China shutdown. But on the other side, China produces a tremendous number of intermediate goods and also essential goods. You know, you have to have clothing, you have to have shoes, you have to replace furniture, and there's a lot of intermediate parts that go into U.S. Production. So as the U.S. ramps up, its appetite for Chinese components increases. So this will continue as long as the economy starts to build in other parts of the world and as long as people need PPE and other things.
Anti-coup demonstrators have again hit the streets across Myanmar to demand civilian rule. The largest rally took place in the second city of Mandalay. Protests in half a dozen cities were peaceful. In some locations, police used tear gas and stun grenades to disperse the crowd. Locals in the largest city, Yangon, also said soldiers stormed several districts and made arrests. The largest rallies took place despite a military crackdown that the UN says has so far taken 50 lives. Myanmar's army seized power on February the 1st and detained civilian officials, including de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Protest rallies have been going on ever since. That's a wrap for this news broadcast.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part of the program, we followed Javad, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the south of Iran and saw the most amazing combination nature could match together, the desert and the sea. We also met the region's native inhabitants and got acquainted with their unique lifestyle. Stay with us as Javad travels to other villages of the region to discover the culture and customs of the people.
In the past, staple grains for all of Iran came from Sistan and Balochistan. But what for severe drought spells and misguided planning over the years, the province has completely lost that status. But today, in some areas of this province, and in the Bahu Kalat district in particular, all kinds of vegetables and tropical fruits are cultivated. There is a mango tree that's in full bloom, exploding with blossoms. In about 5 months, they will turn into delicious, juicy mangoes. This is heaven indeed. Walking around in the palm groves and other gardens in Bahu Kalat gives me a lot of peace. One of the most beautiful things I come across during my stroll is the Baluchi squirrel. The Baluchi squirrel, also known as the stripy or palm squirrel, is a unique species of rodents living in parts of Iran, Pakistan, India, Nepal, and Bangladesh. The most distinctive feature of this mammal is the dark stripes on a white background on its back. In the past, the inhabitants of Sistan and Balochistan believed these stripes were the fingerprints of the gods. A typical Baluchi squirrel is between 13 and 15 centimeters from its head to the end of its rump, and its tail adds an additional 14 to 19 centimeters to its total length. It's quite refreshing to see Baluchi children playing and gallivanting around in the banana groves. Beautiful, pure souls, the product of their serene, peaceful surroundings. Children of Shir Gwaz spend the whole week waiting to go to the fruit groves near the village to expend some of their inexhaustible energy. What they also do is they cook their traditional food on their own, and just like their elders, they gather around, sing, and play. The kids here have distinctive, innocent faces. They are just gorgeous. And they're all wearing their traditional costumes, boys and girls alike. All wearing traditional clothes. They are among the oldest, most original tribes in Iran. They're very noble and very patient. They are a people with a lot of patience. And although some of them don't have good living conditions, they are very patient folks. They're so content. The Baluchi culture is the perfect example of a culture of nobility and peace. And those cultural traits are readily visible in the architecture of the old houses in this village. The architectural design is endemic to Baluchistan. You can't see anything like this anywhere else in Iran. There are also new houses in these areas with designs influenced by Indian and Pakistani cultures and architectures. One of the characteristics of Baluch families is their large populations. Wherever in the village I go, I'm surrounded by many of the little angels offering a breath of fresh air after a long day of hard work. They fill my heart with peace and joy. Perhaps one of the reasons these kids are so happy is their beautiful, tranquil, natural environments. Just as influential is the beautiful, happy colors used in the clothes that these little girls have on. Clothes that are embroidered by the artistic hands of their mothers. Hand embroidery on colorful clothes and fabric is among the most important crafts of Baluchi women. And fortunately, Baluchi women have been able to preserve this exquisite art, a skill handed down through generations. It's noontime. It can get really hot in Shirguaz, even in the middle of winter. But the boys of the village have a good solution to fighting the scorching heat. What they do at a time like this is jump into the waters of Shirguaz River and swim to their heart's content. These children usually play together in groups. The day offers an opportunity for me to make a return to the beautiful carefree days of my own childhood. Live life as an uninhibited, unabashed explorer of the unknown. Playing with these children serves as an outlet for the negative energy in me. Although the children in Shirguaz don't have much to entertain themselves with, they're all growing up happy, healthy, and strong by playing in groups and making the best of what their natural environment provides them with. No computers to spend the whole day on, playing virtual computer games that don't involve any physical activity, video games that have taken the place of playing outside for many kids today, outdoor experiences in nature, and plenty of physical activity that a growing body craves. These children's only toy is nature, going up trees, diving into the river and swimming, playing with animals, singing songs and helping their parents at home and on the farm, frolicking around and playing with stones and pebbles. This non-stop joyful mobility is the reason behind these children's physical health and happy disposition. Very soon, I leave the village and set out for my next destination. I have to travel 250 kilometers to the west of Baluchistan, to a place 80 kilometers north of the city of Nikshar, a name that reminds me of my country's beautiful north. Given its unique geographical location, Baluchistan has a diverse and strange climate. Some parts of this area is affected by the tropical climate of India, in the south by the Sea of Oman, in the west by the Jazmurian Inland Basin, and in the north by Lut Desert. Surrounded by these different climatic conditions, Baluchistan features diverse lifestyles and various plant and animal species. Baluchistan is a dry, water-thirsty land. The average annual rainfall in the province is around 110 millimeters. But the important thing is, all that water comes down in only a couple of torrential rainfalls that cause the rivers in the province to overflow their banks. The ensuing flooding leaves behind a trail of destruction every time. The people here tell me they get snow and blizzards in some winters too, because of the mountains in the Gorgan area. Perhaps you'll find it interesting to know there is a place named Gorgan in Sistan and Baluchistan province. But no, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the city of Gorgan in the north of Iran. This area is comprised of around 11 villages punctuating this mountainous area. It can get freezing cold here. The people of Baluchistan say, except for Mount Taftan and Mount Basman, the only other place where you can see snow in the highlands is the same Gorgan region in Baluchistan. It can get really cold here. Because of the altitude and the relatively good rainfall here, this valley usually has a good amount of water. And abundant water means life and prosperity. The people of Gorgan are either farmers or orchard owners or livestock keepers. The most important thing for them to be able to do any of those things is to have clean drinking water. The people of the first village I visit are very kind and hospitable. In my conversations with them, I realize all the young people in the village are busy working simply because there is enough water. Everyone has something to do. They're all grateful to God for all their blessings. Their biggest asset is contentment. I could say most of the things I've seen in this village were built from scratch by the men and women living here. They're all content with what they have. They even have electricity. They live a beautiful, simple, and healthy life, away from the hustle and bustle of city life and excesses that distract human beings from their true self and from nature. The Baluch community leads a simple lifestyle in their simple homes in Baluchistan. They don't even expect a paved road. The peace that these lovely people exude is a breath of fresh air against the vicissitudes of city life. I am so at peace when I'm in their fold. Before long, I resume my journey and arrive in the village of Archanik, a bucolic settlement second to none. But it isn't the architecture and natural environment that lends Archanik its beauty. The most beautiful thing I come across is the hospitality of the local inhabitants. Archanikis are hard-working, hospitable people. Moments after I reach the village, one of the elders comes to welcome me and invite me to his beautiful house. And the family gives me the red carpet treatment. Personally, I have a lot of respect for the culture and customs of this lovely ancient tribe and have tried my best not to have a negative impact on the culture or any of the good social norms of this community. Instead, I learned from them things that I had no idea about before I met them. I have had many trips to foreign exotic places in Iran. And on those trips, I saw many and varied village houses and nomad tents. But nothing like the teeps in the Gorgan region. beautiful, modest homes that offer peace and tranquility, just like their natural surroundings. Village elder Pir Muhammad fills me in on how they build their houses. My trip is nearing its end. That means I have to leave the beautiful Sistan and Baluchistan province and head back home. I leave with a bag of experience and memories as sweet as the dates of Gorgon. And I do so knowing that I haven't done any harm to the natural environment and the culture of this ancient tribe.
I'm quite sure that this week's documentary about Iran's natural wonders intrigued all our audience across the globe, and I hope it inspires you to come and explore the hidden treasures of Iran. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us, and until next week, goodbye.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear listeners, wherever you are, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to yet another edition from series of Canon Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, we are trying to answer the questions with regard to theology or whatever goes towards religion and the beliefs of people, specifically the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt, in order to discuss these issues with scholars from seminary schools. We have invited Sheikh Murtada Karimi to this session. I'd like to welcome Sheikh to the show and say salam to him.
Wa alaikum assalam, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation, Sheikh. The question of the day that we want to ask is about the hijab veil or covering, whatever it is called in different societies. Hijab has been one of the critical issues that was under question, and actually an analysis of people, whether from believers or non-believers, in the course of history in different societies. Even today in some Western countries, it is also a controversial issue. Some countries have restricted the ladies, Muslim ladies, with hijab, with covering. Some let them free to use their covering or hijab. Some unfortunately restricted them due to their own beliefs. These are the issues that we always actually see in different societies. But let's solve first this issue and a problem for ourselves to see if hijab is necessary for us to have or not. I think if we first solve it for ourselves, for the believers, for the followers of the religion, specifically here, the audience of us who are mostly, inshallah, Muslim brothers and sisters, let's solve it first for ourselves. Is hijab compulsory for us? What is the importance of it? And why do we see usually the ladies without hijab have a good moral and akhlaq, and nothing has been decreased from the personality, from their personality, and they actually are behaving and acting well in the society. So if the society can run like this with some ladies without hijab at the same time with modesty, so why should we insist that we have to have hijab? Though hijab, actually, by hijab we mean a concept for both men and women. But here specifically, I think whatever we say, actually the audience takes it mostly for the female side. So the question is, why should we give that much importance to hijab and covering and veil? Is it necessary to have it? And in case if it is a matter that can be solved, we can remove it, and we can ask our ladies to remove it, to even remove all the pressures that are on us as Muslims, whether in France or Britain or any other country. Today we have also invited respected guest speaker Sheikh Murtada Karimi from Qom Seminary Schools to shed some light on this topic. I think the question was explained to some extent, and this was a basic question for many questioners all around the world, and we want respected speaker to give us some information here. Shekhna, I actually posed the question to the extent that I received it from the questioners, and it was the issue of hijab. Can we solve it once for all, and to solve it, this issue forever, whether we are living in the West or East? Even some say that when your heart is pure and you have nothing in heart, for example, no bad actually tendency is available in your heart, so just go with the way that your heart goes. Leave all the other issues or problems that the other is going to make for you. So how can we tackle this issue, Shaykhuna?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When it comes to the philosophy of hijab, I think we need a separate discussion to talk about that, and maybe start the time today's session to talk about the philosophies for the concept of hijab in Islam. But what you mentioned is that let's solve this issue once for all. If you're talking as a Muslim, and if you're answering this question from an Islamic perspective, why we are not going to do that for all the other obligation? I mean, salat and prayer might be difficult for some people, and they might say that we are Muslims, but we do not need to say the five daily prayers. But from time to time, we may dedicate the time to talk to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to ask Him for our requests, and this is enough. When it comes to fasting, some people might say that it's not necessary to do the fasting 1 month of the holy month of Ramadan. We can, separate it into different parts in the year and all the other obligations. So if you're going to do that, in this way, then there is no difference between hijab and all the other obligations. So the point is that if we are Muslim, it means that we need, as a Muslim, we believe that the last prophet is Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, and he's the last divine book revealed to a prophet is the book revealed to the last prophet, which is the Noble Book of Quran. Even those people who call themselves Qur'anis, meaning that they do not believe in the narrations. We have some groups who say that we do not refer to the narrations, we only accept what is mentioned in the Qur'an. I'm not going to talk about, criticize this, this group of the thinkers, but the point is that if you are Muslims, we cannot be a Muslim without belief in the Noble Book of Quran. No one can call himself a Muslim and say that I do not believe in Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, as the last prophet. I do not believe in the Noble Book of Quran. In that case, you are not a Muslim. So being a Muslim means that you believe in Prophet Muhammad as the last prophet, and you believe in the last book, that is the Noble Book of Quran. Mm-hmm. So as a Muslim, you cannot say that I'm not going to say five daily prayers because I prefer to talk to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from time to time and not in the form of the salat and ritual prayers. No, you cannot do that. You are a Muslim. You believe in the Prophet and you believe in the Quran, and many verses of the Quran talk about this obligation. You cannot say that I'm not going to, fast 30 days during the year, not only the month of Ramadan. It's very difficult for me. For fasting, I can do it separately. 2 days in this month, 3 days in another month. No, it's been mentioned in the Quran. What is the philosophy? This is another discussion. When it comes to hijab, we have at least 3-4 verses in the Noble Book of Quran which are explicit about the obligation of hijab and covering and veil. So if you are a Muslim, you cannot say that I call myself Muslim, but then I do not believe in the verses of the Noble Book of Quran when it comes to the obligations. This is a kind of, paradox and maybe oxymoron. You cannot do that. Mm-hmm. So first of all, the first point is that as a Muslim, you need to believe in the Noble Book of Quran and also the narrations. But for this issue, I said that even if you are a Quranist, the Noble Book of Quran is enough for you to believe in the concept of hijab because of the verses that we have.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.